Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.
Jim Potts back on the air. Thank you once again, and as always, for sharing your Sunday afternoon slash evening with me. I appreciate it. You know, before I get into the show today, I just want to wish everybody happy holidays, whether you celebrate, don't celebrate, you know, and just want to mention it to you to have a safe and happy holiday. I still go by Merry Christmas, quite frankly. Some people don't. But that's okay. This is me, and I'm on the air, and it's my show, and I'm going to say Merry Christmas out there. All right. Today we're going to be talking about child trafficking. We're going to be talking about online predators today, to basically to kind of finish up what we were talking about last week. But before we do that, I got to tell you, I want to send a shout out. There was a situation in Middlebury, Vermont, where a student helped foil an alleged school shooting plot by one of his fellow students. Now, see, this is what I'm talking about when I say that people have to pitch in and help law enforcement. You see something strange, you got to handle it. The investigators say that the principal at the school called the police Saturday after the student had overheard two other students plotting to shoot a fourth student at the school. And apparently the police say that the two students were planning to get guns from a relative, which means that there weren't even guns in their own house. See how careful you have to be with this? Parents, relatives, etc. And basically is what they were going to do was get the guns from a relative and bring them to school, and they were going to do a school shooting. So it's what happened is that once the information became known, the prosecutors got an extreme risk order. And so you can get those, which is something that you can get like on a very quick situation because something's going to come up so they can seize the guns from the relative's home. Because think about it. You know, they got a Fourth Amendment protection, and now the police come barnstorming on there. They're going to need probable cause to get an arrest warrant and then arrest warrant, a search warrant, et cetera. Otherwise, it's a Fourth Amendment violation. So that's why the prosecutors had to go to the judge, explain to the judge what was going on. And they went ahead and confiscated their weapons. Now, one would have to wonder, they could maybe have called the relatives and told the relatives what were going on. But I guess they didn't want to take any chances. So, like I said, this is a situation where the guns were not even in the home of the potential shooters. They were going someplace else completely to get them. Now, they said one of the kids is going to be taken for psychiatric evaluation. And the other, I guess, has been placed in the custody department for children and families. So at least the kids were no longer a threat, the police say. So I want to make a shout out to that attentive student. Probably not listening, but that's okay. It's the principle of what I'm talking about here that's important. Everybody needs to be listening out to see, you know, about any type of potential issues like this and then taking it to the next step. Hey, before I forget, anybody that wants to call in, the number is 818-602-4929. I'll be repeating that again, but 818-602-4929. And you can always email me like people do at listen up with jp@pottsandassociates.com. And if you want to get on my blog list or email blast about upcoming show topics, just text Potts and Associates and text that to 22828 and enter your email address in there and you'll get the email blast from us. And by the way, all of this information is available on the website as well. So, hey, the second shout-out that I want to do, you know, I get emails about whether or not the government should be doing more than what they're doing and what's the FBI doing, and the FBI is under a lot of scrutiny. But I got to tell you that a situation came up here recently where the FBI, I got to send them out kudos, and I'm going to tell you about that because I want the listeners to know that the FBI is working very hard. I'm an FBI supporter. Now, this took place in Holland, out in Ohio, by the way, in Ohio. And basically, there was a man and a Toledo woman. So it was Holland, Ohio, man was 21, and a Toledo woman, 23, and both of them in custody because he was allegedly going to target a synagogue. She was going to do, she had, I guess, had gotten some bomb-making materials and she wanted to attack a bar in Toledo. Now, the FBI announced the arrest of these people, but it was unrelated, so I want to make that clear. Now, targeting Jews and another, you know, from an anarchist standpoint, I guess, you know, they were on it. And they found out about it, and they found out about it a number of different ways. So I'm going to share that with you because, again, I want to emphasize they are out there working hard, but we need your help. Now, with this first individual, the man who was going to who was targeting the synagogue, he was busted because of undercover police work. And they found out that he was basically radicalized and he was a supporter of ISIS. Now, this is something you don't hear about as much anymore. You hear about the fact that we got them on the run, et cetera. But, you know, their ideologies are out there on the Internet. Now, apparently, he had spent months planning a violent terrorist attack on behalf of ISIS here in the United States. So this is not over. And eventually targeted a Jewish synagogue, as I told you. That synagogue, by the way, was in the Toledo area. Now, the charges basically described him as a calculated individual and that he was, in fact, fueled by an ideology of hatred and intent on killing innocent people, and that is people of the Jewish faith. Now, obviously, that's also a federal crime because it's a hate crime, because he was targeting people of the Jewish faith. And so what happened was this individual started conversing with undercover officers, and he told them that he was a supporter of ISIS. And there, at some point, the FBI had found his online jihad, you know, information, and you know, he and they caught up with him on all of his different plots that he was doing. Again, guys, this was on the Internet. So this guy wasn't too bright, in my opinion. You know, they learned things. They learned that he had stated that Jewish people were evil and deserve what was coming to them. And in the wake of recent synagogue shootings, like in Pittsburgh, he was actually expressing his admiration for the attackers to the undercover agent. So these hate crimes against people, I don't care what nationality, national origin, religious belief, this stuff's always going to be viewed as wrong. And, you know, we were fortunate that he was actually able to catch him. Now, the special agent in charge said it was a matter of months that this individual's name was Damon Joseph, by the way, and he progressed from being radicalized. Then from there, he went to a jihadist, to attack planner. He ultimately decided to target, and actually it was two different synagogues, by the way, and that he was going to do these mass casualty attacks, you know, on behalf of ISIS, so he says. Now, you know, ISIS, I'm sure whoever's in charge of ISIS has no idea who these guys are, but that's why they do what they do. They get people radicalized by putting some of this on the Internet. People read about some of their ideologies, and they turn around and you know, to me, they've got something wrong with them in the first place. And then they turn around to commit these acts. Now, this is what happened. The reason why he got busted was because the undercover informant was in contact with this guy. And then at his direction, and that is the potential attacker, you know, he had him, ordered him to buy the weapons to carry out the physical jihad. So he didn't know who he was talking to, basically. So now, apparently is what they found out, was he had posted photographs online of firearms, knives on his social media account, as well as photograph originally distributed by the media, you know, wing of ISIS. So all of those activities. Now, remember something. When you're out there on this Internet, understand that there are law enforcement agencies that are out there looking at the Internet. That's what they do. I did some of that with the intelligence department. They called it open source, and I was working with some of that. And you look for keywords, buzzwords, and things of that nature that draw our attention to an individual. And, you know, he had described plans to attack where the most people are gathered and inflict mass casualties is what his game was. Now, for those of you that heard me speak before, whether it was on the radio or not on the radio, I've always talked about the fact that it's these mass gatherings that they like because they have more opportunity to kill more people. So I'm not telling you to avoid crowds and things of that nature, but you remember what I've always told you, stay to the outside, you know, of the crowds as opposed to the inside of the crowds as well, which will give you more of an opportunity to be mobile if, in fact, something did happen. The second person, you know, again, unrelated, so I want to make that clear, but it also had to do with Toledo, Ohio. She was accused of purchasing and transporting materials to use as a bomb for a domestic terrorism plot in Toledo. Now, her name was Elizabeth LeCron. She's only 23 years old. 23. And she purchased these materials, and she had bought, apparently, black powder and hundreds of screws that she expected would be used to make a bomb. And in her words, she demonstrated she was committed to seeing death and destruction in order to advance hate. Literally, her words. And, you know, this is a situation, people, where this demonstrates terrorism comes in many different ways, from many different directions. And, you know, the FBI is out there trying to keep up with all of this. So, again, I will say that I, you know, would expect that anytime any of you see something that looks like it might be problematic, please just let law enforcement know. Let them check it out. And I don't, wait, you know, and let me make it clear. I don't expect you to be police officers, okay? I don't expect you to go and do the undercover work or go and do this. Or you go, don't even get involved in any of that. You know, keep it simple. Let them know what you saw, and they will act from there at that point. But these were examples, okay, of the vigilant public, you know, between the situation with the student, with this individual happened to, the other individual happened to be an undercover agent. This lady got busted because of the fact that other people saw things that were going on and basically turned her in. So, you know, I'm not going to try and beat a dead horse, but just kind of keep it in mind. Because she was also active on social media, so just to let you know that. And she was actually, she glorified mass murderers, such as Columbine shooters, and was an admirer of Dylann Roof, who committed a mass shooting at the Charleston church in 2015. All of this came out on her social media. And she even went and visited Columbine. Yes, she went and visited Columbine. And then on social media, she writes, it's going to be a lot of fun, and I can't wait to post pictures. This woman, she was demented, in my opinion. You know, and apparently in August, the FBI got involved through confidential sources, communicated with her, and she stated that she and associate had devised a plan to commit an upscale mass murder at a Toledo bar. She stated that she knew the bar only had two ways in which they could get in and out, and she was going to use that as a tactical advantage. So this is what I say, you know, these bars, are they becoming the new soft target now? I don't know, but you saw what happened at Borderline, and, you know, these bars have limited, you know, access in and out because they're trying to watch the doors to make sure people aren't getting in, you know, without paying. So I don't know. If you go to bars, you know, in my opinion, you follow the guidelines and the tips that I've given you in the past and just be aware of what's going on, okay? Okay, those were the two shout-outs though I wanted to do. One was to that student and one was to the FBI. I'd let you know that, hey, the FBI are out there working on your behalf. Let's turn to these emails now. Mr. Potts, a friend of mine told me about you and your radio show, and I took her advice and listened last week, and then I checked out some of your archive shows. I think what you are doing is fantastic. I have told a number of my friends and family about your show. Keep going, and thanks, Susan St. Paul. Hey, you know what, Susan? Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. If we keep spreading the word, we can get this information out to everybody, and people start tuning in and listening. Hopefully, it's going to make us all a little bit more safer out there. So, thanks. Okay, second email. Jim, your show last week talked about child abductions, and I thought you did a great job, but I wanted to make an additional point. International parental abductions do not usually end in harm to the child. It's the domestic custodial objections that are more likely to have violent outcomes for children. There are reasons for this. One, it has to do with divorced mothers or single mothers, I'm sorry, unwed mothers. And then a fight for custody always ensues. And then, of course, messy divorces. So what she's writing in here and saying is about, you know, these custody battles can be very nasty, especially when the parents are not together in terms of husband and wife. So now they're fighting, apparently, I'm drawing out of this, that, you know, who wants custody, et cetera. And, you know, we've all heard those kind of things in our lives. Anyway, let me continue. Let the listeners know that putting the children in the middle is wrong. Work things out for the children and not for your own, you know, selfish, you know, intentions. Thanks, Linda. And she's from, looks like Jacksonville, Florida. Now, when she told me about this in this email, I did a little research and looked up some incidents to see exactly what she's talking about from that perspective. And I did find some incidents. And there's three of them that I came across. And one was one situation where there was a non-custodial mother when she abducted her 8-month-old son from his custodial father in Texas. And she told the father she killed the boy. She actually killed the child to prevent the father from employing his custodial rights, and also in retaliation for his alleged involvement with another woman. So she turns around. She doesn't kill herself, but she kills the child to keep the child away from the father and to punish the father, basically, you know, because he had an involvement with another woman. How do you take that out on the child? Anyway, another one that I found was about a 2-year-old girl was abducted by her non-custodial father, and this was in California. A week later, both were found dead. The father committed suicide after shooting his daughter. I mean, once again, how do you do that? Then there was another one where there was a non-custodial father in Utah where he abducted his 7-year-old and 5-year-old sons, kills them, and kills himself because he was angry over not being afforded sole custody of the children. So I agree with her. She's absolutely on point with this when she's talking about the fact that they take and kill their own because of custody battles or divorce battles. Look, these are parental issues. You got to act like adults out there with this stuff. You cannot take this out on the children. They've done nothing. You brought them into the world. You bring them into the world, and now you're going to take them out because you're pissed off with the person who, quite frankly, excuse the expression, who you slept with, and now it didn't work out, and you're going to kill the child to get even with a parent? Come on now. You know, these kind of things are, you know, hard to talk about because they don't make sense. Children should not be subject to any of this. Should not be subject to any of this. So here's what I send a message to you before I move on. These situations with the schools, because schools get involved, and I've done some pieces on the schools as well, but the custodial parents inform schools, okay, aftercare facilities, babysitters, etc., and others who at times may be responsible for your children about the custody agreements. Don't keep it to yourself. Let them know so that when these kids are not mistakenly released to the wrong people, all right, make sure it's on file with the school, any babysitters, etc., let them know. And when you have babysitters, by the way, you don't necessarily always have to tell the other one where the babysitter is if you're a custodial parent, because you don't want them to go by there and do something and then snatch the child as well. All right? So, yeah, sad. Okay. Let's pick it up where we left off last week now, more specifically about this last piece that I had wanted to do. It's the next last piece because we want to talk about online predators also. But this business about trafficking, human trafficking, now you have different kinds. You have children, you have young women. Now, I will tell you that the FBI has estimated that well over 100,000 children and young women are trafficked in America. That's a lot. And then they range in age from 9 to 19, with the average age being, what do you think the average age would be? 11 years old. 11. And I got to tell you, many of the victims are not just runaways or kids who have been abandoned. Many of them are from what can be considered good families who are lured or coerced by clever predators. And these predators, people, are particularly adept at reading children, knowing what their vulnerabilities are. That's the key. And these predators are going to be where the kids are. Now, somebody a couple of weeks ago talked about my book, Right to Counsel. That book has to do with something very similar to this. So just to let you know, because the sexual predator in that book that I wrote about and that ultimately I was part of a defense team for him. But look, let me tell you, he got those girls at ages, the youngest one was 9 years old, vulnerable. He ended up, you know, parking in a park or near a park, saw a little girl who was upset with her sister, and basically, you know, coaxed her into getting into his car because he would take her home because the sister wouldn't. See, this is vulnerability. They look, that's what they do. They are predators. Some of the other girls that he had gotten got into his car to hitchhike. Please, tell your kids, don't be taking rides from strangers. These girls lost their lives. I'm not getting into all of it right now. It's in the book and all that kind of stuff, and I don't want to rehash all of that. But these poor little girls lost their lives because they got into a stranger's vehicle. Please caution your children. Do not do things like that. And some of these kids were all murdered, but some of them are just plain snatched, and now they are taken and they're put in places where they are, you know, sexually abused. But this business about child sex trafficking, let me just tell you what the definition is. It's basically the recruitment, harboring, transportation, provision, obtaining, or advertising of a minor child for the purpose of commercial sex act, which involves the exchange of anything of value, such as money, drugs, or even a place to stay, all for sexual activity. Yes, there are people actually out there like that. Now I'll say, while any child can be targeted by a trafficker, apparently research has shown that traffickers often target children with increased vulnerabilities and prey upon a child's vulnerability, and they use psychological pressure and intimidation to control and sexually exploit the child for financial benefit. Now, I will tell you that the issue of child sex trafficking is very complex, and not all instances of child sex trafficking involve an identified trafficker. In some cases, it is the person buying sex from the child who actually exploits the child's vulnerabilities as well. All right. And these traffickers, by the way, and buyers of children for sex, they encompass all racial and social economic, backgrounds. It's all across the board. It's not any one particular, you know, age group or race, etc. You know, they have people out there that are very cultured who get into this. Child sex trafficking has devastating consequences for its minor victims, as you can imagine, with long-lasting physical and psychological traumas, disease, and sometimes even death. So parents, you know what your children are doing. Stay close to them. Talk to your children. You know, people don't talk to their children that much, in my opinion, anymore. I always tell the story about my wife and I were at the airport, and we were sitting down waiting for a flight. And we looked around. Here are parents and their children. They all have these electronic devices, and they're all on each individual devices. They don't talk. You know, do you have dinner at night? Everybody has a family meal. You talk about things that happened during the day. What do? You've got to talk to your children. Get their attention. I had one friend of mine that said that she can't get a child's attention. He spends so much time on the computer. He's always on the computer. Look. Think about something. Why are they always on the computer? What are they doing? Who are they talking to? Because we're going to talk about the online predators as well. Now, let me tell you about some risk factors here. While any child could be targeted by a trafficker, research has shown that traffickers often target children, like I told you, with increased vulnerability. So I want to talk about the vulnerabilities. Number one. Children who are chronically missing or who frequently run away, all right, especially if it happens more than one time. First of all, if your child is running away from home, we got to know why. What's going on? Why do they keep running away from home? What's the home life that's going on? Next one. Children who have experienced childhood sexual abuse, especially if the abuse was unreported or unaddressed or resulted in the child being removed from the home. This should not be sexual abuse in the home, people. Children who have experienced prior sexual assault or rape are very vulnerable. And children with significant substance abuse issues or live with someone who has significant substance abuse issues. This is not new. This language is not new. Children will get into medicine cabinets. Children will get into your drugs that you have stashed, especially if they know that you have drugs in your home. They're going to get into them. The next risk factor that I want to mention, children who identify as LGBTQ and have been kicked out or have been, let's say, they stigmatized by their family. Now look, you know, well, let me just tell you what LGBTQ means in case anybody doesn't know. Okay, that's part of the gay community language. Lesbian, gay, bisexual, transsexual, or queer. All right? So here's a person in a home who announces the fact that they fit into one of these categories, and now the family ostracizes them and maybe force them out of the home, not, maybe not physically, by the pressure that they're putting on them, or sometimes maybe even physically. So these individuals are also, okay, risk factors. This is also a risk factor for those. All right? Now, let's talk about some red flags. Red flags. And again, if anybody wants to call in, it's 818-602-4929 if you have any comments or questions regarding these areas of discussion. Okay, now look, red flags. There's no single indicator that confirms the existence of child sex trafficking. Several indicators combined can mean it is more likely that a child is being exploited or is actively being targeted and recruited. Did you hear what I said? Targeted and recruited. That is why being aware of the following indicators is very important. Now, awareness, here we go again. Even with some of the things I've been telling you, putting this aside, about people paying attention to what's going on around them. This particular one has to do with children who are vulnerable. So let's talk about some of those indicators. First one, child has a significant change in behavior, including increased virtual behavior or associates with a new group of friends. Number two, the child avoids answering questions or lets others speak for him or her. The child avoids answering questions or lets others speak for him or her. Next one, the child appears to be frightened, resistant, or belligerent to law enforcement. Now, look, I understand about law enforcement, so don't be telling me about, you know, well, they could be that way because they don't trust law enforcement, etc. I'm talking about when something is brought to their attention and they're trying to get information from the child because the child has been placed in a certain situation and now the child is not opening up because they don't want to rat out whoever it is that's directing this influence over them. The next one, the child lies about his or her age and identity. Age and identity. Because, you know, anything under 18, by the way, you know what that's going to be, statutory rape. They're under the age and they're underage, and now they engage in some type of sexual activity. That's going to be statutory rape. And, you know, I will tell you, it's not going to matter if you turn around and say, hey, I did not know the person was under 18 years of age. You know, she told me she was 18. That's why they call it statutory. It does not matter. And some of these young girls are out there. They're advertising. You got to be careful, all right? My opinion, I want to get into moral aspects of it, but you shouldn't be out there doing those things these days anyway, in my opinion. But people do it, all right? So if you're going to be out there, just understand it doesn't make any difference. That girl lies to you about her age. And if she's under 18 and you engage in a sexual activity, it's statutory rape and you're going to jail. You know, like I know, stay away from it. Anyway, the child looks to others before answering questions. So that's normally they're there with some other people. Before the child answers, the child looks at some adult standing next to them or somebody else standing next to them. You know, because they're searching to find out whether or not they should answer, not answer, or how they should answer. That's all problematic, and that should raise a red flag in and of itself. The child does not ask for help or resist offers to get out of the situation. You know, and it's what happens is the child does not self-identify as a victim. They don't realize they're a victim. They've been influenced. So if they've been influenced, they don't see themselves as a victim. They're just doing what they've been told. Children are followers. And for some reason, if these people have exerted some kind of influence over them, they're going to listen to what they're saying. You know what I'm talking about. That's the way that it works. Sometimes children are quicker to talk to other people than they are their own parents for a lot of different reasons. Maybe some parents are not approachable. And that's problematic in and of itself. You know, you as parents, you need to always be approachable. Let your children know that you care enough about them to, in fact, sit down and want to ask, you know, answer any questions. Look, parents, I know you work hard all day. You come home from work, and here it is. You know, you just want to sit down, have that drink, and mellow out for a moment. Here comes your child with an issue. Now, this isn't all parents. I get that. But you've got to listen to them. That's part of your responsibility. They may have these issues. And there's cases out there where the parents didn't listen, didn't take the time with them. And you have to do that. Now, also, the child seems coached in talking to law enforcement. They're coached. All of a sudden, law enforcement's trying to get to the bottom of it and trying to help. And they're giving these answers that sound like more of adult answers because somebody has told them what to say. Those are factors. But law enforcement's going to pick up on that. I'm going to tell you right now. Now, the child uses trafficking-related terms like trick, the life, or the game. So, look, listen out for those terminologies, people. The child uses trafficking-related terms like trick, the life, or the game. Those are buzzwords. Trick, the life, or the game. Buzzwords. Now, the last one on this category is that the child is preoccupied with getting money. All right? Getting money. That's all they think about. And then they display photos of cash about how they've had this cash, how they've had this. Look, your child all of a sudden is getting some cash, getting money. They're preoccupied about money. You really need to find out what's going on. Because maybe it's not this. Maybe some issue with drugs. I don't know. But if they start focusing on the money, that could be problematic. And I'm not talking about the little entrepreneur that sets up a little lemonade stand out in front of the house, people. All right? It's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about some serious cash. And all of a sudden they're talking about this or they end up having it. How many of you as parents ever actually search your kids' rooms? Now, they'll tell you it's an invasion of my privacy. You can't do that. Yes, you can. You're the parent. When they're at school, hey, it doesn't hurt to take a little perusal through their things, find out what's going on. You know, now some people will probably say, well, if she's got a diary, read the diary. Look, there's parents out there that read their daughter's diary or their son's diary. It's out there. All right. Ask Raymond from Everybody Loves Raymond. There was an episode where his mother did that to him and he didn't know it for years later, but she was keeping tabs on everything he was doing by reading his diary. But hey, look, I'm only saying that the times, I mean, I understand about privacy, come on. But the reality is we're not living in these times. We're living in times where, in fact, you need to know. Now, let's talk about some physical indicators. Physical indicators. The child has multiple cell phones or electronic devices, and guess what? You didn't give it to them. Now, what does a child need with a multiple cell phone? And by the way, if you do give your child a cell phone, do you ever take a look at the bill to see where all these calls are going, where the calls are, etc.? Yeah, well, think about it. Why does your child have multiple cell phones? Or a cell phone, you know, you gave them one and now they got another one that they want to talk about a friend gave to them. Make the inquiries on something like that. Because that second cell phone is probably their business cell phone, quite frankly. Now, the other physical indicator I kind of touched on a little bit, child has large amounts of cash or prepaid credit cards. Where are they getting them from? Especially if you didn't give it to them. And if they start telling you, well, I got a part-time job. Well, first of all, if they get a part-time job somewhere, you would need to know that anyway. So don't fall for that. The child has no ID or the ID is held by another person. Now, again, this is an ID situation. You would always know what ID your child has or doesn't have. And why would somebody else be holding their ID? Multiple children are present with an unrelated male or female. Who are these people? Why are you talking to that person? Make those inquiries. Next one. Child has unusual or unexplained sexual paraphernalia, such as bulk condoms or lubrications, things of that nature. Okay? And they've got it stashed somewhere. This is what I say. Check out their room when they're not there. All right? Someone can get creative, by the way. But check it out. Next one is that there's evidence the child has been or will be traveling. Now, to me, why would you not know where? And these are all textbook, by the way. Okay, these are all textbook physical indicators. But why would a parent be knowing about a child traveling? Now, look, some of these kids are involved in sports programs. My sons were involved in sports programs, and they played on these traveling teams. Now, in all honesty, I went with them. But all parents can't do that. So if they're on a traveling team or something, check that suitcase out, find out what's going on, and make sure you verify everything. The next one, child has a name or symbol tattooed, burned, or branded into his or her body, particularly when coupled with the child's reluctance to explain the tattoo. The child's tattoo matches other children's tattoos, and the tattoos indicate money or ownership. All right, now that may sound ridiculous, but look, this is textbook stuff. This stuff just shows up on them. Oh, we all got a tattoo. Oh, don't worry about it. You know, they did it, so I did it. Look into those situations. You know, my boys talked about tattoos. I told them they couldn't tattoos. I told them, no. You know, but they were doing it because, you know, sports and all the rest of this kind of stuff. Doesn't work that way. My oldest son finally got a tattoo, but he got a tattoo. He was in his late 30s. But he's got a tattoo now. Okay, well, nothing I can say about that, but I can tell you he sure didn't have it when he was living in my home. Next one, child references traveling to other cities or states, or is not part, you know, or is not from the current location. A child may also lack knowledge of his or her travel plans, destination. In other words, they're talking about this stuff, but they're very vague about it. And again, I mean, I don't know how a child could be doing this. I'm giving you the textbook stuff here. But, you know, again, what parent would not be talking to them about this? Don't listen to this. Now, when you search through your kids' things, if the child has, like, hotel keys, hotel receipts, you know, other things, items from a hotel or a motel, what is that telling you? And by the way, hotel, motel, California just passed a law effective January 1st, 2019, California employers that own hotels now have to train their employees in human trafficking. Oh, yeah. This is California, people. You know, so now, as a matter of fact, we'll be doing some of that work ourselves, actually training people regarding human trafficking. Hotels and motels, that's where they're going to be. Next one. Presence of an overly controlling or abusive boyfriend or older female. These are the warning signs. Watch out for it. The child is recovered at a hotel, street track, truck stop, or strip club. Now, that makes sense there. Again, they say that these are the indicators, and I don't know how a responsible parent would not be out and about, or where's the child, how come he's not at home. So some of these things really surprised me when I did the research on it, quite frankly, because I couldn't even imagine as a parent these things going on around me, me not being aware of it. But, hey, you know how it is. Kids in high school, they skip school. They do all these different things. You're thinking they're in school. They're not. If the school doesn't call and let you know, who knows where these kids are? So, yeah, I can believe it. There's things that happen with these kids in school when they're in high school and you don't find out about it until late after they become an adult. And they turn, oh, guess what? I played hooky from school. Really? Stay on top of it. The child has notebooks or slips of paper containing phone numbers, dollar amounts, names, addresses, etc. Why would a child have that? Yeah, this stuff was amazing to me when I actually looked into this, because I would think that this is so far out of the norm in terms of how a child is being raised, you know, that, you know, why would these things be there and you not be aware of it? But they say this is what it is. Child has items or an appearance that does not fit his or her current situation. You know, runaway child has money, electronics, new clothes, new shoes, any of those kind of things. Has his or her nails done? It's like, where'd you have your nails done? Where'd you get your hair done? Where'd you get the money to do that? Those are the questions you should be asking. You know, some of these guys, when they're in high school, some of these ladies, young ladies, you know, they want to look good. I get all of that. But if it's something that looks like it's a little bit too much or it's out of the norm for your household, make the inquiry. Just don't just let it go. And don't listen to some excuse about my friend did this for me. What friend? All right? Oh, yeah, you know, she and I were good friends and she did this for me and blah, 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 blah. Don't listen to that. Find out. Make sure. All right? If the child ever says anything about online, you know, classified ads or other escort websites, again, those are the obvious ones to me. But I guess, like I said, these are the physical indicators that are out there. Child references traveling job opportunities, including modeling, singing, and or dancing in music groups or magazine, you know, sales. You know, listen, we all know children want to get into the doing those kind of things. It all sounds glamorous and the rest of that. I get it. But look, get the control. The last one they say about physical indicators, child has unaddressed medical issues or who goes to the ER or a clinic alone, all right, or with an unrelated adult. I mean, I don't know how an unrelated adult can go with a minor, and that's kind of beyond what I would think would be, you know, sensible or normal, but that's what they say. So, look, you have all of these things out there. These things are real concerns. We're not talking about occasionally these things happen. I told you the FBI is talking about 100,000, you know, children and females, you know, young women across the country per year that's involved in this. You got to be proactive, parents. Don't just let your children get caught up in this kind of stuff and then later on you find out and you wish that you, in fact, you know, had done something or paid closer attention. Because I want to tell you something. The exact number of child victims of sex trafficking in the United States is really unknown. You know, because they really haven't done the comprehensive research and there isn't the scientific data that's out there right now. You know, and I'll also tell you that this trafficking of children appears to be fueled by a variety of environmental and situation variables ranging from poverty or the use of prostitution by runaways as throwaway children. Look, it's not hard to believe a child is a runaway. They'll do whatever they have to do in order to survive out there. We've seen it. Okay, we've seen it. We know that that's there. Prostitution, yeah. And that's what happens to these kids. Now, I will tell you that the experts really widely agree that any efforts to reduce the prevalence of child sex trafficking, as well as other form of trafficking, should address not only the supply, but here's what it is. We need to address the demand for this stuff. We need to address the demand. What does that tell you? That means there's people out there that want this. That's why these porno sites for children and all the rest of this kind of stuff, because there's a demand. It's like the drugs. There's a demand. People want it. People want it. That's the issue we need to address. Because if we don't have the demand out there, we're not going to have the issue. But let's face it. This is America. People do what they want to do. If they can get away with it, they're going to get away with it. My message is, look, if you see this, hear about it, know somebody might be a potential victim of any of this kind of thing, report it. Let the police do their job. All right? Let them know. And as I've stated on other programs, understand something. If you make an anonymous call or say you want it to remain anonymous, it remains anonymous. All right? It remains anonymous. Now, I will tell you, to be honest, in the event that something did happen and you're the one that initially opened up that door, and let's just say it goes to a trial because you've heard about people being, you know, being able to face their accuser, I'm not going to say 100% of the time that at some point, you know, you end up being dragged into court as a witness. I'm just being honest. That's something that could happen. But, you know, I think we all have to take responsibility for our community. When I worked patrol, I actually worked patrol in the same community that I lived in. And why? Because of the fact that I think we all need to take responsibility for our, you know, for our community. And certainly for our children. I was raised in a small town in upstate New York. And let me tell you something, the parents all knew each other. Anytime anybody stepped out of line, the parents were calling each other, talking to each other. Yeah, in a small town you can do that. But let's take that small town and call it a small neighborhood. Same thing can happen in the neighborhood. So do what you have to do. Do what you have to do. Okay, the other area that I want to talk about before we close out this segment has to do with online enticement. Because this has to do with online predators. They're out there as well. Online enticement involves an individual that's communicating with someone believed to be a child via the internet with the intent to commit a sexual offense or abduction. Now, this is a broad category of online exploitation and includes sextortion, all right, in which a child is being groomed to take sexually explicit images of themselves or ultimately meet face-to-face with someone for sexual purposes or to engage in a sexual conversation online or, in some instances, to sell or trade the child's sexual image. This type of victimization takes place across every platform, social media, messaging apps, and even gaming platforms. There's people out there using this technology to satisfy these types of inappropriate urges and needs. And again, what do I always say? Check your children's computers. Know where they've been. See what sites they've been visiting. All of that's there. Put up the firewalls. Do the things that you have to do so maybe that they can't do that. Although I'll admit some of these kids are probably pretty good, you know, we're getting around some of this stuff. So from time to time, you got to call in somebody to do some forensics if you really, you know, think something is going on. Now, I'll tell you some red flags. The most common tactics used to entice children include engaging in sexual conversation or role-playing as a grooming method rather than a goal. Asking a child for sexually explicit images of themselves or mutually sharing images. Developing a rapport through compliments. Discussing shared interests or liking their online post. All this is known as something called grooming people. They're grooming them. All right. Sending or offering sexually explicit images of themselves and pretending to be younger. Some of these people think that they do it as if they're 9 years old like they are, 10 years old like they are, but they're not. Offering an incentive such as a gift card, alcohol, drugs, lodging, transportation, or food. Those are all the red flags and the most common tactics. Here's the risk factors before we close it all out. Certain online behaviors may increase the risk for online enticement and becoming a victim of sextortion. It's called sextortion. And these behaviors include lying about being older in order to access certain platforms which would allow communications with older individuals. So the kids lie. They say they're 18 when they're not. Initiating online communications and or offering an exchange with offenders, such as requesting financial compensation, alcohol, drugs, gifts, etc. for sexually explicit content of oneself. And then it gets back to the same thing about sending explicit photos or videos. All right, they call them sex, I guess, like text, like sex text or S-E-X-T-S of oneself to another user. So there it is. All right, this stuff is real. You've got to be careful when it comes to your children. It's not just making sure that they're doing their homework anymore. It's making sure that these kids are not becoming victims because this is an issue. And this issue was brought to me a couple of weeks ago. That's why I wanted to talk about child abductions by custodial parents, non-custodial parents. And that's why I wanted to talk about this business about child trafficking. I never realized it was this much out of control. All right. Okay. Hopefully, you know, that's been helpful information for people out there with their own children. Please take the information from the show that we've experienced with this for the last 2 weeks. And hopefully your child will never be subjected to this or somebody that you know. All right, you've been listening to Jim Potts, LA Talk Radio. It's time to close out the show, but let me remind you that you can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/JimPottsAuthor. Hey, and be sure to join me next week. And if you like what you heard, spread the word. Until then, I want you to be aware, I want you to be vigilant, and I always want you to be safe. And have a good holiday, people. And don't be drinking and driving. Take care.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.